At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Hot diggity dang in the shadows of the Pacific Northwest. AEW presents Wrestle Dream, and this is a WrestlingInc.com's after show of that show. It's your boy Flobo Boys hanging in here in the catbird seat, but as always, I'm not alone. I'm being joined by a man who was actually a childhood hero of mine because he told me what it means to go on strike. Please welcome future Hall of Famer Jimmy Corderas. What's going on, man?
I'm good, Flobo. I'm good, man. It's getting chilly up here in the Great White North, so I have to sip on a little warm stuff here, you know.
Oh, is it tears from all your haters on the chat? Like, what's going on?
Oh, yeah. You know how it is. And,
Everyone loves me. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm the Canadian heat magnet. What can I tell you?
I love hanging out on X, like behind the digital shadows, and see people like argue with you all the time.
You're like Mr. Wilson in the
Home Improvement.
Home Improvement. He's like,
I don't think so, Tip. We are streaming nationwide, globally, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, and other platforms, and Twitch as well. So come on, say hello if you have questions or comments. Those are totally open. As always, it is an AEW show, so it's a mammoth endeavor. So thank you so much for being here, because you made it. It's 12 o'clock Eastern on the East Coast. Thankfully, only 9 p.m. local time here in Los Angeles. A lot to get into, man. But the first thing is the assassination of Bryan Danielson. Oh my gosh, we're going to break this up. Let's talk about the match first. Bryan Danielson, John Moxley, AEW Championship. Bryan has said, hey, look, if I lose, I'm out. John Moxley's looking for his fourth reign. We had ourselves a pretty psychological match. In fact, I think a lot of the crowd didn't know what to make of it, but the match itself was great up until the ending for me. So besides we get to the afterglow, what was your thoughts about the match of the defense, John Moxley's new reign as being champ?
I like the match. I agree with you, Flobo. I thought it told a great story. It made sense, because what would John Moxley do? He would target the neck. That is the issue that's been going on with Bryan. I see, I keep saying it. I can't help myself. Bryan Danielson going into this thing, that his neck is the problem. It's probably what's going to cause him to call an end to his career. So why would he not target it? And he did a great job of really doing some damage throughout the match to the neck. And he dominated most of the match. Yes, Bryan got some offense in near the end there when they were leading up to the finish. But the entire body of the match was mostly Moxley getting a lot of damage into that neck. Even little things like tearing that kinetic tape off and all that sort of stuff. Telling stories during the match. I love that kind of stuff. And I want to know why. What was it about the finish you didn't like? Was it the finish itself or the aftermath?
Oh, well, we'll get to the other one in a second. But for me, it kind of came out of nowhere. And I'm not sure that was kind of the actual storytelling of the match or the fact the crowd was really only into, like, the more avant-garde stuff. So we had some patches in the matchup where it really felt that John Moxley had to work safe, but then Chill tried to really injure Bryan Danielson, but the crowd was not in for that. Maybe it was a long show. They were kind of sitting on their hands. I was getting kind of worried. But then when you had the more extreme stuff, people got in. So when the chokeout happened, it was like no react, there was no boo, there was no cheer, right. It was kind of like, is that it? And that to me kind of felt like hit the pit of my stomach.
It was a little weird, because I don't know, maybe I'm overthinking this, but it felt a little bit too much like the main event from Monday night. A very similar finish, because we had the kick out at one, which was very similar to what Sammy did. And then it looked like he was going to fight out of that sleeper hold, just like Brian did. But he got choked out.
All right. So it really wasn't meant to be. And what we got was one of the more stirring endings to an AEW pay-per-view of all time. Well, it looked like there was going to be someone out there to save Brian Danielson, but we saw everyone, the old Blackpool Combat Club. We saw Marina Shafir, John Moxley really beat down the former champ, and everyone came out to save him. Talking about Private Party, who had a match earlier in the show, and Jeff Jarrett to no avail. There really wasn't any pyro. There really wasn't the last ditch debuts. It really was a somber note. Kind of reminded me when Doomsday kicked Superman's ass. Your thoughts about the match and the aftermath?
Again, the finish, I agree with you. It kind of had the crowd. You didn't get that awe. Like, you didn't get the pop. You didn't get the awe. You know, you didn't get the boo. You got kind of, ooh, they were a little silent. But what intrigued me more than anything was not the beatdown of Bryan Danielson, was taking the title belt and putting it in a bag. I wonder what that means. It's got to mean, you know, obviously we don't know yet.
Right.
But there's got to be a reason why they would put that title belt in a bag. Like, they've hijacked it and they're taking it away. Maybe they're going to get rid of it somehow and introduce a new title belt. I don't know what's going on with that, but I find it very interesting that they would do that. As far as the beatdown goes, I don't think they needed to reintroduce the plastic bag. No, I don't know. I'm not a big
not a fan of attempted murder. Come on, man.
No. I mean, like, yes, I know people talk about Terry Funk and Ric Flair many years ago, but we already saw it at the pay per view last month or so. Mm-hmm. We didn't need to see it again. They could have done the same damage without using that and accomplished the same goal.
So it was interesting because I felt with the bag and the belt that was kind of a Dean Ambrose throwback. But then now that you mentioned it, like, why would you throw back to Dean Ambrose? George says means Mox is getting a new belt, which is something that's very plausible in AEW. I can't think of a design being that old. I mean, everything gets a refresh, and so that could be one of it. But what does it really mean for the direction of the brand, right? We talked about the Swerve title reign, and we'll talk about Swerve later on the show, but it was kind of like, hey, AEW is looking for their voice, looking for the direction. John Moxley is very capable. I will not take anything from Mr. Moxley, but it kind of felt like the big, giant, safe button. Hey, got a recent AEW? Call John Moxley in this fourth reign. Am I just being too critical of the brand?
Yeah, you can say you're being too critical, but it's not a lie. Let's put it that way. It doesn't feel like a lie. There's got to be something more to this. And I like the fact that they're leaving everybody hanging, making you want to tune into Wednesday to find out, okay, what is the deal going on here? Obviously, you want to find out what's going on with Bryan Danielson as well, because getting stretchered out and the whole bit. They left you with questions.
Yeah.
Which I like heading into Wednesday night. Obviously, you want to see these questions answered. It's part of Wrestling 101. Yes, it is a pay-per-view. They had a title change, but you still want people to tune in on Wednesday and find out what the heck is going on here.
Yeah, the mission accomplished. For sure. Yeah. So thoughts about the way Excalibur looked like he was getting emotional, or sounds like he was getting emotional on the end of it. Is that too much? Was that crossing the line? I just wanted your opinion on it, because you're also on the production side. Oh, you were.
Yeah. I don't mind him getting emotional, but I don't think he needed to go that far. You saw the emotion on the faces of all the talent coming to the ring.
Sure.
That was plenty. And yes, he could emote certain things on commentary, because that's part of commentary's job, is to help tell a story and tell the story that's happening in the ring. You can make that argument that he did take it just a little step too far, but at the same time, it also shows how loved Bryan Danielson was to the entire locker room and entire crew.
Yeah.
So, you know, I understand why it was done. I'm just nitpicking now when I'm saying it was maybe taken a little too far.
Definitely for the sickos. But you're right. I'm kind of interested to see how this plays out on Wednesday, whether or not this truly is the end. Because I guess if it was the end, maybe it was me being WWE trained. I thought if it were to be the end, you'll get like that. Now, thank you, Brian. But this was the opposite, which could be the start of something really cool. So shout out to AEW.
But really quickly, yeah. Like you said there, you know, he said that once he loses this championship, his in-ring career will most likely be over. At least with the way they beat him down, it gives him a reason to want to come back and get retribution. So you have that at least.
Yeah. Kind of makes you wonder whether or not, how will Bryan Danielson retire? Will it be, you know what I mean, like another match or kind of thing? But again, it hit the mark. I just think that that crowd was expecting something else. I'm not sure because it was kind of the home territory of Bryan Danielson or the kind of match they got. But the patches of silence made it look a bit, felt a bit different than I think what the intent was.
Yeah, and again, being nitpicky at the beginning, fighting outside before the match, which is fine. I like that because that way they don't have to fight outside a long time during the match. But why was the music still playing while they were fighting? I just found that odd.
Yeah, that's totally a gimmick that happens a lot. I want to give a shout out to Heimfly. He says, if WWE does an ending like that, it's genius. AEW does it and it's trash. I think the difference here, and I disagree, but I think the difference here is expectation. Because WWE is so, in my opinion, I'm not going to speak for my broadcast colleague here, but I think because WWE is presented as being the polished brand, when something like that happens, it seems very different. Like when the ring collapses or when a mic gets cut out or something like that. AEW already has that heightened hyper-realism, and so it's almost at a point where it's like so realistic, you're wondering what's happening next. Is Bryan Danielson going to get a coronation? No. Is John Moxley going to gloat with the title? We didn't get that either. So there really wasn't a conclusion. Now, that could be for its benefit, but I think that's the reason why we're talking about it now, tonight, more than ever.
Yeah, and I don't like making the comparison because it's two different things and presented in two different ways. WWE does it like we see the stuff that we saw recently with Sammy and Cody by the bus.
Yeah.
Making look, you know, you talk about realism, that is the apparent realism. It's the suspension of disbelief and at its best. And they do it different ways. And each has their own style. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. There's no right or wrong formula. It's only what works.
Right. Yeah. You know, it kind of reminds me of like other brands that have tried different things that aren't around. Like, remember WrestleLicious? do you remember Wrestling Society X? There's all these random things. Well, before we get to the top of the card here, Wrestle Dreams, the second iteration in honor of Antonio Inoki, who, well, last year's event was the 1 year anniversary of his passing, so 2 years over there. Tony Khan had an announcement. It was not the smoothest, but it was pretty cool to give a little bit of respect to a legend that Antonio Inoki was.
I wish they would have just given it a little more. It didn't feel like it was enough for someone like an Antonio Inoki. Yes, they introduced the family members, which was kind and nice. But at the same time, I wish it was felt a little more polished, like you said, a little more classy, as opposed to, hey, here we go. We're honoring him next. And they rush right into the next thing.
Yeah.
It didn't, I don't know. It just felt like it was just there.
Right.
I don't want to be disrespectful, especially to a legend and an icon like Antonio Inoki, who deserves every bit of tribute that he gets. It just didn't feel like it was enough for me.
I'm torn because I'm of a certain age, right? So I remember the lot of appearances of the late career of Antonio Inoki, and the fact that there is a show that even dares to thank him is great. But you're right. I think, unfortunately or fortunately, AEW is in a very advantageous position to educate a new generation of who Antonio Inoki was. I'm not saying give me 2 hours of packages, especially on a 4-hour pay-per-view, but it did seem kind of interesting that Tony Khan come out and say, we're going to have a good night. We'll do the chant twice, and that was it. You missed that. You had no idea it was a tribute show. But not to nitpick. I wish we had more.
Yeah.
I have Stevie Camp here. Hey, the goat. Jimmy is the goat.
No, I'm Greek. I'm a lamb.
Bad. So 0 Hour was pretty fun. I liked the Acclaim match. I thought it should have led into the main card, but the IWC/X/Twitter really wants your opinion on a certain matchup. This one takes place with Harley Cameron against Anna Jay. The pin that Anna Jay got to get the dub was aided by the referee being able to put the shoulder down. Thoughts about that one, as you are a Hall of Famer? Soon to be Hall of Famer, referee.
You don't actually physically interject yourself in that sort of situation when you're a referee. Yes, if the shoulder is up, you can acknowledge it to the talent, let them know the shoulder's up. You signal that the shoulder is up, slide a hand underneath the shoulder, signifying that the shoulder is up. That'll give the talent the idea, oh, that's right, my shoulder's up, get it down. Or the person, you know, performing the pin to hook it a little tighter and get that shoulder down. Yeah. Now, I've seen people on there saying, well, there was a wardrobe malfunction. He was trying to fix her top No, he didn't. He actually guided her shoulder down to the mat to count three. Right. And that is just plain wrong. It when the camera catches that, like we had the other incident a little while back where it was Jack Perry and Brian Danielson. And Danielson had Jack Perry and he rolled him up and the referee swept Jack Perry's leg to help him kick out. You can't do that sort of thing. I mean, yes, it could screw things up finish wise and where they want to go if you treat it as a shoot.
Right.
But we've been told over the years, hey, if they don't kick out, you count three. And if they don't listen to you, if they stay out on the floor too long, you count 10. And that's it. And you will get heat with them, but you won't get heat with us.
Right, exactly. Because you're the officials.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so to me, it was kind of interesting. I think I remember a lot of times in matches when that happens, like, hey, shoulders up or something like that. But Twitter had a field day with that match finish.
No, I know. The only time I counted three with a shoulder up where I didn't get any heat was when Kurt Angle and Daniel Puter. But that was a different situation altogether.
Oh, yeah. You were the ref in that match. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Corinne City. But I mean that in the most respectful way. I mean, you did the best you could.
No, it was just reactionary, believe it or not. I'm going to do this. It just happened and I did it. And when I got to the back, they said, who told you to do that? I said, I just did it.
They said,
okay, good. And I'm like, okay.
I got a dumb question. Do wrestling refs get together and be like, oh man, you know, that Rick Knox, he a legend. Or if you know what, I'm actually more a Corderas guy, you know, or is it kind of like, whatever. We're just kind of.
No, everybody kind of has their own favorites. Like I was from the start, I was a Tommy Young guy.
Oh yeah.
Loved Tommy Young and getting to watch him because he used to travel with Mid-Atlantic Wrestling when they used to come up to Maple Leaf Gardens up here when most of the talent that Jack Tunney used to use was from Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. So, you know, I remember the Steamboats and the Wahoos and the Jay Youngblood. I was a Steamboat guy from day one though.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I grew up a Chiyoda fan because he had the same shoes I did, the T-Mac 2s from Adidas. I was like, oh, I got those! Two! Yeah. Yeah, that was my thing. So, no disrespect, but please don't keep my
car. No, none. Just... None.
let's talk about...
No gift for you this Christmas.
I see how it is. Wait, is Canadian Christmas the same day as American Christmas?
Yes, but we get 30% less presents.
Yeah, what's up with that? Grab your loonies and toonies.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
So the show today actually started off with an absolute banger, Jay White. The Switchblade begins Hangman Adam Page. And if I were a betting man, I thought Page would have got the dub, but I was pleasantly surprised. Two ways. One, the result, because Jay White did get the win, and the placement on the card. Thoughts about this one?
No, I was surprised that this opened up because I thought something else would open up because, you know, like they say, the two most important matches on a card is what opens it and what closes it. Mm-hmm. But I was pleasantly surprised with this one, too. Hangman's really been on a tear lately, and regardless of the fact that he lost this match, you know, contrary to popular opinion on the internet, it doesn't matter that he lost the match. He still got over in this match and he still got elevated in this match. Jay White is the one who really got elevated more than Hangman did, but Hangman didn't need the win. Jay White needed it. And it really helped him out. And I thought they had a hell of a match. Yeah. And Juice Robinson is just.
Yeah. You're a fan.
I am now.
Fair enough. I like the fact that Tacoma didn't forget about the happened to Swerve's house, with the fire and all that. I wasn't sure if they were going to like still use that, but it was pretty cool that long-term storytelling, I guess.
Right.
Jay White, man, here's somebody that he's in a category where I won't say he's getting buried. That'd be kind of inflammatory, but it just seems like he's looking for that next thing. Got to ask you the pen question. If you had a chance to do something for Jay, what would you do?
Oh, man, I don't know where he goes next. Maybe you stick with Hangman for a little bit. Let Hangman get some heat back on him, and you continue that rivalry for a little while before you figure out who's going to be next for him. Because the one thing I find is they do tell, contrary to popular opinion, they do tell stories in AEW. The problem is they blow through them so fast.
Whoa, I take
it. Yeah, no, it's just they rush through them. They're more short stories than they are long-term stories. And long-term stories are really, really, when you got a guy like a Hangman,
yeah,
who can tell those stories. We saw what he did with Swerve for so long. And then you got a guy like Jay White who can do it as well. Why not continue that thing since it's working so well and they gel so well together? And throw Juice Robinson in the mix and you got a nice little rivalry going.
I'm inclined to agree. I think they do blow through storylines, but I want to jump around to underscore the contrast, right? That tag team match, AEW Tag Team Championships of Young Bucks against Private Party, there was the long-term storytelling of Private Party not winning the big one. They were here for 5 years, have always been an afterthought. To me, this is a story that I didn't think was worth the reheat, but it was, because the match itself was an absolute banger. The EVPs get the win, of course, with the TK driver, but the question remains, Private Party, are these guys invited back to the dance, or is this a flash in the pan?
I hate to say it, man. I think this is more of a one-off for them, at least in that spot. I don't see it continuing with the Young Bucks or them. Was it just trying to find someone new to fill that spot? That's what it felt like. And they said, oh, well, we had a match with them 5 years ago. Maybe we can do something now. And I get where people say, well, they have a history. When you have a history with someone, one match is not a history. You know, I hate to tell you that. History is a series of matches or a series of consequences or a series of something that goes on with these, right, with the two individuals.
But yeah,
don't get me wrong. I did enjoy the match. There was a lot, obviously, that went on during the match. It was a typical Young Bucks style match,
sure,
which was fine. And there were just moments where, I don't know if it was my TV tonight, but it just felt like there were moments where the crowd was a little bit silent, and that was one of the matches where I felt it until the end, where they started to get with it.
Right. And this is why I went for that match first, because if you're a long-term storyteller, there is a story. It was there 5 years. When a company has you around for that long, the fact they're able to go back, it's pretty cool. I remember Kofi Mania, how that started. It started off with Kofi beating his chest, saying literally 11 years or 13 years, you know, you got to trust me. But you're right. This one kind of felt like, yeah, it was a hole to be filled. Private Party did it exceptionally well because they have stayed ready and stayed in shape for a long, long time, but it does seem pretty much like a short-term thing.
Yeah, it's tough to do, too, if you don't get used on television very often. You know, it is tough to get people back on board.
Yeah, I'm with that. Stressful says this is just a callback, not long-term storytelling. Great match. Yeah, it was a great match. There's no denying it was a great match. Got to give a shout-out to Jake Allenar, who says, fine show. Thanks for Super Chat, by the way. Love the closing angle, but man, with the AEW pay-per-views now monthly, you don't need these 10 to 12 match marathons. This issue really needs adjusting. And, well, I want your opinion on this, because there is that max deal starting next year with AEW pay-per-view going to a new destination. Does that change the order of business? If you've already established yourself as a 12-match brand, do you change it up for the interest of brevity?
No, I don't see what's wrong with changing it up a little bit. You don't have to do the WWE model where you go, well, thank you, Sean. You don't have to go the 5-match pay-per-view route that WWE does. You can find a happy medium where it's like 7, maybe 8 max. But also include those matches on the pre-show, because you don't need like 4 matches on the pre-show. Shorten your pre-show up, because you know what? I love listening to stuff. I love listening to RJ. RJ City is just too much, you know, and he's great at what he does. And having people like Jeff Jarrett, who can handle the desk very well, and Renee, of course, you know. Yeah. So, you know, you can shorten those up, and I don't think that's a problem. I think that would be fine. The only unfortunate thing is, obviously, people are going to have to sit out on the pay-per-views every once in a while. But, you know, it's not a participation trophy by just, okay, we got to find a spot. Let's have like one of those, what do they call it? The gauntlet matches or something like that.
Eliminator matches or eliminator matches.
Yeah,
fair enough. No, I do think, I maybe this will go back to the main problem. Again, for those listening right now, I thought, I'm going to jump ahead. I think the show was very good. It was a fantastic show, but it really is a tribute show. And I kind of wish there was an opportunity here to make Wrestle Dream stick out as a show, having more of that tribute element. But you have those individuals, like you were saying, doing like the pre-shows and all that kind of would add a bit more credence to things. But that's just me. All right. So let's talk about that AEW TNT Championship. Jack Perry, the scapegoat, taking on Shibata. I thought this was kind of cool. I think Shibata has a tremendous upside on the roster right now. But let's talk about the aftermath after that. But the match itself was pretty solid. Jack Perry, is he growing on you? You a fan? What say you?
I think his work is solid, like you said. Is he growing on me as a character? Not really, because I don't see any. No, I don't see any. It feels like the same every week. You know, that's all. I want to see a little diversity in his character. You want to see a little bit of, it doesn't have to be, a complete 180 every week, just little snippets of doing something different, as opposed to doing that dark thing in the back every week or walking through with a little hammer and breaking little TV sets and all that sort of stuff. I just want to see a little diversity in his character. That's all.
I can just imagine you being like a citizen of Gotham. Like, oh, this guy's a bat again. Listen, bro. Just come out during the day. We'll talk about it. Get some coffee.
Don't get me wrong. I'm actually very impressed with his in-ring work.
Yeah.
You know, he has really gotten better. I just want to see, like I said, a little bit more from his character. That's all.
All right, so it was the aftermath when I got people talking. Dale Garcia came in with the run-in, and also MJF, remember him, comes out, beats up Dale Garcia, says, I found the Dynamite Ring, which I think is kind of a bad mistake because I think the Dynamite Ring needs to retire, but that's besides the point. And that brought out Adam Cole, baby. Adam Cole's back. MJF is back. Dale Garcia looks like he's going to be next in line or second in line for the TNT Championship. What say you about the new pecking order?
I find it very interesting and I'm liking it because I'm an Adam Cole fan. It's been a while. Hopefully he can get back in ring shape because it does take a while to get the rust off, but I think he won't have much of a problem with it. He's that damn good. So I like the fact, and I enjoyed the fact that he got that pop he got, which is very important. The people really, really responded to when they heard, as soon as they heard the music, they reacted. And that's when you know you've got a star.
I think it's more critical now. I think when Adam Cole debuted, it was great that he was there. Don't get me wrong. But it was like, where does he go? It was like, great. And the talent roster is still stacked. But as far as like the crowd responses, now, if you're Adam Cole, you have to hit the ground running on this run. This can really pivot your legacy as an all-time great.
Right.
That's right. But shout out to Sean Ellis, who has a question for you. He says, Jimmy, question. Do you see any differences in when you were a referee as a new younger referees now in WWE? Wrong brand. I'm just kidding.
I'm seeing a difference across the board. I don't see that even in WWE, a lot of times the rules don't get enforced as strictly as we were told to enforce them. There is a little more, and I hate this term, referee's discretion.
Yeah, why do you hate the term? We say it all the time here.
No, there's no discretion.
Oh, yeah. Nine. Get in the ring, guys.
Nine and a half. See, we're on the same wavelength.
Put it in here. No, I get that. I totally get that. I remember so many John Cena matches where he's like out, like sipping a pina colada, like nine and a half, just like not taking his time and signs. But speaking about nine and a half, let's talk about this Women's World Championship match. 9.5 stars on the Flopito scale. Will Nightingale against Mariah May. If you guys are long-term listeners of Wrestling Inc. podcast, you know I'm not the biggest Mariah May fan, but I thought today was a complete performance for the champ. But more importantly, despite the loss of Will Nightingale, I think now more than ever, she needs to be the face of the entire division. Jimmy Corderas, walk me through this. The AEW Women's Championship got a chance to sign up with Wrestle Dream. How did Mariah May fare?
I thought this was a great match these two had. They probably better than the other one they had in the tournament. But as much as I'd love to see Willow with the championship, it's too soon for Mariah May because she's really found her stride as the women's champion. So that's the only thing that I'm disappointed about. It's just too early, in my opinion. But soon, or maybe not soon, but one day, Willow should have her day. Should.
Wait, what do you mean? You don't think it's a possibility? You don't think it's
Well, it should happen, but I don't know sometimes the way they do things over there.
I don't either. I know less than you do. I don't have any boys in the phone, so I know less than you do. I have Peter Rosenberg's number, but he doesn't pick up. Oh, listen. So I think about this, about the best characters in wrestling. And I always say, even though wrestling is a visual art form, moves, holds, ring gear, all that stuff's theme music, all that stuff's important, but the best characters are the ones you can talk to your friends about or non-friends about at the water cooler on Monday. Hey, you see right. That guy who eats his vitamins, rips off his shirt, or hey, Bailey's a Karen that wrestles. There is nobody in North American programming, say for maybe Delilah Doom, that's doing what Willow's doing. Right. If I am Tony Khan, I mean, that's a ticket. You ride that to the very end. Smile anyway.
That's a good point, but at the same time, when you have someone that's that likable and that people are invested in, do they actually need the championship for people to stay invested with them? Maybe not. There's some people who make the championship, and there's some people who the championship makes them.
Right.
And I don't think Willow is someone that needs a championship because she's that over and she's that likable.
Allow me to be a dead horse there. Does that dynamic work where there's so many championships in AEW?
That's another issue altogether with so many championships. How many women's championship are there? You got the women's championship. You got the, what women's, is Mercedes?
TBS. She has New Japan Strong as well. And then the ROH title.
Yeah. There are quite a few championships, but, maybe she can finally take out Mercedes Moné. You can go that route and still have Mariah May do her thing as women's world champion.
Yeah. I never understood the TBS division. It felt like it was made for Jade Cargill, and then they never found a thematic reason. So, like, for me, give me all the championships in the world, but tell me why I would go for one or the other. Like, for me, and we'll get to the next match next, I think the international title is the number two title, despite the fact the TNT title has been older because of the quality of matches around it. But I don't know. I'm guessing. It's my headcanon. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's the way it's presented, too. The perception is reality.
That's deep. I like that. write that down. By the way, if you haven't checked out Ref and Rants, you have to. That show is amazing. It comes out every day. Let's see. AEW International Championship was also on the line, the triple threat match. Will Ospreay, Ricochet, of course, these guys are a classic factory, but they had the X Factor of Konosuke Takeshita. And, well, let me say this. The match itself was amazing. Ricochet died like six times. but it was that callous Don Callis and that family. And we have ourselves a new era because the favors were cashed in. You got yourself Kyle Fletcher being all swole all of a sudden, being all evil all of a sudden. And Will Ospreay was left asking what happened. So I'm going to ask you, Jimmy, what happened tonight?
Apparently Kyle Fletcher had a change of heart.
The end.
He decided to use the screwdriver. He did it. I'm going to be nitpicky here. We see too many guys enter the ring covered up with a hoodie to hide their identity. Why doesn't somebody just come out and show themselves from the beginning? You know?
Well, I mean, we want the Sting costume.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. You're trying to shock the audience and go, who is that? Who is that doing it? Yeah. At the same time, wouldn't it be more shocking if he came down, grabbed the screwdriver from Don Callis, stared him down, then shockingly turned around and attacked Will? I don't know. It just make it look like he's there for the save and then do it.
Yeah, I don't quite understand the hoodie if you're cleared to be there. Like if you have the hoodie and you're like suspended, or you know what I mean, like, or if you're in the crowd as like a fan. But if you're a wrestler, just come on out and do your thing. But that is a very nitpick to me.
Of course.
But
what I do.
Yeah, of course. You tighten the screws, baby. That's what it's all about. But what does that say about the international title division? Takeshita is someone I always felt that he was like the fetch of AEW. They're trying to make him happen, but now he has gold. And Don Callis looks like he's a happy man. What do you think his reign's going to be?
I think he's going to have a good reign. I like Takeshita. I actually loved him in this match. I thought he was the standout in this match because, you know, Will was Will. Ricochet was Ricochet, but he was different from both of them throughout the entire match. So that made him stand out a lot more, you know, in this match, his style. And I like him as the international champion. I think he should hang on to that title for a little while. It shouldn't be a short one, that's for sure. Let him with Don Callis too, you know, as a mouthpiece.
Yeah.
It's instant heat.
Instant heat. I asked on Twitter, how does Don Callis get mic time every time he comes out? No one has given me an answer. But if you have the answer, please let me know. You said something really critical, though. You said Ricochet was Ricochet. Now, 3 or 4 months ago, he was a high-priced signing. Is this already something we should raise a red flag about?
It's not a red flag. It's just, again, people are going to read this the wrong way. This Ricochet that we're getting here, I thought was going to be different from the Ricochet we saw in WWE. I'm not seeing much of a difference.
Wait, how so?
In just his moveset, everything he does, it's very similar. The only difference in AEW is he gets to do it with someone who can do the same. With someone like a Will Ospreay. That's the only difference. But it's nothing different. We're not seeing anything from a character standpoint. You know, I'm a character guy too. I'm very glad to see what you can do in the ring and what you present. It's very, absolutely, both guys are very talented. I don't get me wrong, but I want to see more. See Will Ospreay, at least we see something come out of him when he grabs a microphone where people are getting behind him. He gets people invested. Right. He's got that likability factor. I haven't seen that from Ricochet yet. Yeah. He was obviously in the WWE, he was struggling a little bit when he had mic time. I haven't seen any mic time here or enough of it to come up with a fair assessment, if that makes any sense.
No, I'm with you 100%. I felt like Ricochet was in his career. I mean, he was born in 1988, so he's not young, but he's not old. And I understand being like, hey, look, I got this body, I have this athleticism, it's not going to be there forever. I need to share my gift with the world. On a move set. So the matches have been 6, 25, 45 stars, but you're right. If I were to buy a AEW Ricochet action figure, how would I know that era was different, say for the difference of his tights, right?
Right, right. And you just really made me feel old when you said he was born in 1988. Gee, thanks.
He is. Back in my day.
Yeah, back in my day.
What's an 8-track? Speaking about people who are old and dope, this is actually my favorite segment. That really wasn't the match. We had Prince NanaCoffee.com make his way down to the ring and shout out Swerve, the former AEW champion. A lot has been on his mind. His house got burned down, lost his title. But MVP and Shelty B make their way down to the ring. And there really was an honest exchange about what it means to inspire someone when it comes to representation. The offer was made. MVP is like, we are going to represent you. So it's not much of an offer at all. But Swerve says, oh, heck no, Nana and him selling drugs to kids is my family. Jimmy, what is going on?
Other than that line, I liked it that he said that Nana, because it looked like there was going to be something going on. But saying that Nana and him were family, perfect. Yeah, I like that pairing. They work well together. Don't break it up, you know, because, I love it. I love it. I love the coffee too. But I love the little spat at the end. They didn't get into it. They teased the physicality without doing it.
Yeah.
And I like that because a lot of times you see it turns into a bit of a brawl and security guards get bounced all over the place. I'm glad that didn't turn into this.
Oh, just man.
Tease it. Let it simmer.
Yeah, tonight's security has been the most overworked security I've seen in wrestling. There was like so many pull-ups. Like, again? Like, who's going to get there?
Except the extras that were like, man, you see how much TV time I got?
Yeah, exactly. People don't really know about this. Peeling back the curtain. So I used to do PA work for WWE. So they'll come into town. I would show up. I would check in. Mm-hmm. I'll get the coffee orders and get like the errands or whatever. But if you've ever been to like a hardware store, like wrestlers will show up from all over the city and just wait outside. hoping to be an extra. They're like, pick me, pick me. It's the most surreal thing. Cause like, I saw you last night. Your t-shirt. You know, that was kind of crazy to see. Sidebar, the episode where Shayna Baszler bit the back of Becky Lynch's neck, I had to go buy the condoms for the blood packs. That was
kind of wow.
Yeah, that was in the other Ontario, California.
California. Okay.
So PrinceIronCombi.com, I gotta say, because he did. I like this idea of the beatdown clan / hurt business. The name hasn't been revealed yet. The slow burn there. Now, there are people on the IWC on X who say, ugh. You got Swerve, you got MVP, you got Shelton Benjamin. This looks very WWE. Now, was that an impression you got in the segment, or did it feel different enough for you?
No, it felt different enough for me because the guys made it feel different. MVP fits in everywhere he goes. I like MVP. He's one of my favorite guys. And and Shelton, I loved working with Shelton, and I loved what he's doing that. He very, very underappreciated talent. Underutilized. He is so good, and he's got a great mind too, which should be tapped into when now that he's over there. And of course, there is that tease of maybe someone else joining that crew after he's done maybe that MMA fight that he's training for. But
I thought it was you.
No.
I think it'd be a good manager if you got the phone. If Tony Khan called you and say, "Look, I need a stable. I need Brian Cage as a mouthpiece. I want you, Cordero's." You'll do it, wouldn't you?
I would think about it. I'd rather be the director of officiating.
Leave it to you to be like, you know, these protocols need to be readdressed. I'll take your money, but I need some order in this job. We got to talk about that 2 out of 3 falls match. I like the idea in principle, Hologram versus the Beast Mortos, because one of the cool things about Mexican Lucha Libre style is that it's kind of standard operating procedure. Having a 2 out of 3 falls match, it kind of had that feel for me. The crowd wanted to be anywhere else but this matchup here. Kind of disrespectful, I thought. But Hologram did really well, I thought, and Beast Mortos has really been a pleasant surprise. Your breakdown of this one?
I enjoyed the match. It was very, like you said, a very lucha style, and you have to have a little bit of everything, a little bit of variety, and that's one of the things I do like that they do is they have different styles of matches. For me, it's not my particular cup of tea, but I could shut that off for a little while and just be entertained by what I see.
What is luchadors or 2 out of 3 falls matches or
no? Okay. The luchador style, I'm more of a, you know, give me Gunther and Randy all day long and that sort of style. And another match we're going to talk about a little later, give me that sort of stuff. And I'm fine. But with a match like this, instead of saying, well, it's not my style, I'm just going to lay out for a little bit, I kind of shut that off and try to appreciate the athleticism.
Absolutely. I mean, with pay-per-views being this long, you really have to treat every kind of match like waiting for a bus. And you go, oh, that's not for me. I'm going to go. But I did like this. Yeah.
That's number 36 bus. I'm sorry. That's not mine.
Yeah. I'm with you 100%. Like my favorite style, and I feel like I'm beating a dead horse here, is that I loved NXT UK when it was around because it was like really gritty. Everyone hit hard. Even the comedy gimmicks like Saxon Huxley and Nina Samuels can beat you up. And that's to me what combat was. But the Lucha style was pretty cool. Just for those who didn't watch it live, Hologram gets the first and third fall. The Beast Mortals get the second fall. Does anyone look bad after this one? Can Beast Mortals bounce back, or is it considered a clean loss?
I don't know what plans they have for Beast Mortals. Is he part of that stable now with Jake the Snake Roberts? I have no idea.
So they mentioned that it was actually a trade. Lance Archer's heading over to Callis Family and changed for Rush and Beast Mortals. So I didn't think you can do that. Oh, it's a cool idea being traded in factions, but yeah.
I found that interesting. I didn't mind that. Like we made a business arrangement. We did it in exchange.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of cool, but I don't see, I know people say, well, you know, Jake was in Mexico for a few years. So that's the connection he has with having lucha style wrestlers. that he's going to guide. I don't know. It just doesn't fit with the Jake Roberts style that I remember anyways.
True. No, it makes sense. Like if factions were like a team inside of AEW, it makes sense. But you can imagine if you like hang out with your boys and go, listen, Jim, we traded you to some other friends. Like, hey, wait a minute. Yeah. I thought we was the boys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you guys are hanging out at the other coffee shop. Get it.
Yeah. Right. Do I just leave now? Like, no, you Venmo us first, then you leave.
Right.
I will see how it rolls out as the weeks roll on. If you listen to the Wrestling Inc. podcast, thank you so much. We're breaking down Wrestle Dream 2024. Make sure to hit that subscribe button, the like of the video. And if you're on that audio version, that 5-star reviews, let people know who your favorite hosts are or whether or not I should not be in the catbird seat. I am no Jack Farmer. Oh, yes. No, thanks, man. You slide. All right. So let's talk about people who are doing things that are kind of overperforming. Brody King, a man that had so much potential written on his tattooed body when he entered the company years ago, I've really had a display here against Darby Allin, the guy who just seems to be indestructible. And the match was an all-out draw. The steel steps get involved, but ultimately Darby Allin gets the win. Candidate for match of the night, what say you?
Sorry, say that again.
Candidate for match of the night.
I don't know if I would call it match of the night, but it appears Darby Allin likes getting hit by buses, and he got hit by a bus tonight called Brody King. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know what I get the fighting from underneath and the, you know, big guy, little guy dynamic and that sort of thing. I wouldn't have minded seeing Brody King somehow get the victory or squeak out a victory here, because again, you talk about people who need a victory and people who don't. Darby doesn't need one.
Really?
I don't think he does. He's super over. I don't think a loss here would have hurt him. I think people would have sympathized with him more and maybe climbed on board. And then he cuts a promo on Wednesday saying, still questioning himself. You know, he needs to reevaluate himself and reevaluate where he's going with AEW, because he's here for life. He's a lifer, that sort of thing. But at the same time, you know, I need to be better. I need to accomplish the goals that I set for myself and that sort of thing. Stop talking about the past.
I'm not a Darby Allin hater, because I think I could see how some people wrote him off in his early career and he's able to do it. But I do think he's entering that Jackie Chan stage of his career. You watch a movie with Jackie Chan's like, I don't want any trouble. And he like beats up 30 guys. And it's like, wait a minute. How are you still alive? You know what I mean? And so I understand why he went over today, but Brody does kind of need it if you really want to have that roster be as strong as possible. But the match itself was pretty brutal. Why not?
No, it was pretty brutal. And that stair spot, my goodness. Where he had Darby under the stairs, under the side of the stairs, and he was standing on it and stomping on it. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Come on. Yeah, man. I just remember when the House of Black was originally formed, I was like, oh my gosh, super group. Didn't work out that way, but I kind of felt like Brody has a lot more upside. I would have re-signed him if he was contract was
up. I hate to use the term they dropped the ball, but it was a missed opportunity.
Okay, so let me ask you a question about the dropping the ball thing. I think a lot of times fans say that a lot, but I'm also with you 100%. There really was a chance to make Brody, and it happens a lot in AEW, any promotion, Brody King or Wardlow, to really make them Powerhouse Hobbs, to really make them part of the crossover fabric. What about Brody you thought was dropped? Is it the fact that the matches he had were great? Was it the promo things? Why do you think Tony got cold feet?
I wish I could speak for that. I speak to that. I have no idea what it was, because there seems to be a picture. The big guys like a Wardlow, like a Brody King, for some reason don't get pushed to the forefront as much as other guys do. It's almost like the anti WWE thing, because remember the WWE at one time was the land of the giants. Yeah. And you would never see a guy like a Rey Mysterio or an Eddie Guerrero becoming world heavyweight champion, which they ended up doing, and they broke the mold.
Yeah.
And they show that it can happen and it can work and it can be feasible, but it's almost like the other way around in AEW, where we don't want big guys. We don't want huge guys. Yeah. We want them there, but we're not pushing them to the moon. I'm not sure what it is.
I'm actually with you. Because on the women's division side, I said you have Nyla Rose, who's literally the most unique person on your roster, and it's very, very beatable. Very, very sadly beatable. Aaron Mick says, they were in Washington, his home state. I wouldn't have every home state guy lose tonight. Yeah, I mean, Brian Danielson can talk to that. And Swerve as well. Don Leesta says, there's barely any big men in AEW. Brody shouldn't have be that hard to push as a monster. Yeah, I mean, look, I understand on paper if you're like, I don't want to do a Braun Strowman if I'm trying to see what the other guy's doing. But you can really have a lot more fun with that archetype because it's less people to take that. That's
what's the easiest story in the world to tell? David and Goliath. You know, Goliath gets over on David for a little while, but then eventually David makes a comeback.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know what I kind of miss in wrestling as an archetype? Yeah. That beast from X-Men, like intelligent brute. But I mean, the guy who's like very smart, like what Keith Lee was supposed to be doing in his prime, right. Didn't like how it work out. I think that'd be a cool thing if Brody's like, no, I actually love talking about Shakespeare in history. So let's talk about the match that you could hear a pin drop. The ROH World Championship was on the line. Mark Briscoe, fighting for the honor of himself and his brother, takes on the Ocho. Chris Jericho was looking for championship number 9. It was back and forth, but it seems Mark Briscoe got the upper hand tonight. Learning Tree takes the L, Jimmy Corderas. I don't know about you, but that was definitely let me go check the fridge time.
Well, I'm getting, you know, see, I hate to sound like the here come the guys going, oh, there goes the AEW hater again. I don't, as much as I like Mark Briscoe, I don't know why the ROH championship is that prominent on an AEW pay-per-view. Yes, I understand that they're part of the same company, but it's not AEW and ROH are two separate entities, are they not? It's not like, yeah.
Jimmy, I think you know the answer to that. Yeah, I know you're asking that question, but I think you know the answer to that.
Well, I'd rather hear you say it.
Because it's a consolation prize. And I'll say that. Look, Mark Briscoe is a fantastic talent. The Briscoes were amazing. But he got that championship because it was, we have you in the roster. We don't know what to do with you. And but if you realize, they didn't even adhere to RH rules. They kind of did their own thing on the ring. So, like, he has a championship. Chris Jericho wants to be number 9. Quick story. In and out.
Right. That's it.
Do you disagree or agree? Or
no. That sounds about right.
Okay, I'll take the heat.
No, because it just, I, like I said, as much as I like Mark Briscoe, I just felt it was not great placement on the pay-per-view. And I don't mean to discredit the ROH championship, but at the same time, why isn't that on the pre-show?
I think there is I feel like I'm becoming Jimmy Corderas. There's one character tweak I really would love Mark Briscoe to say, hey, look, I know the rules. I know what makes ROH great. I want to be an everyman hero without going into like the word of the day and the conglomeration. That to me kind of makes it a bit more cartoonish, but there is a space for that. But the fact that Chris Jericho all of a sudden wants the ROH championship does really feel like another stopgap measure. Mm-hmm. Not to knock anybody, but it really wasn't my favorite story of the night.
No.
But I think we had a comment here saying that they actually liked the match here. So maybe I wasn't the only person that said that. Mm-hmm. So, but that was,
well, it was fun. It was fun at times, but like you said, the biggest judge of the match and how it's going along is your audience and how they're reacting.
And I think that's what, I mean, I won't say I never, it's been a long time where a crowd really, to me, because I guess the way the venue was shaped, really made me feel whether something was awesome or cringe. And that match, the Briscoe Jericho match, I was like, yeah, why are we doing this? Because the crowd was not into it at all. And I wonder what that was. I wonder why the crowd was, I know why I was into it, but I wonder why the crowd wasn't into it, you know?
I hate to say it to my fellow Canadian, but I don't think the Learning Tree thing is getting over with a lot of the audience. Maybe that's part of it.
Sean Ellis says something kind of borderline disrespectful. He says, Chris Jericho and Paul White needs to retire. I say, when you get to be a certain level, you make the rules when you walk away. I will not push you out because Jericho is one of the all-time greats. But that's just, this is not really working. But I like the Brian Keith, like the big.
How did Paul White come up in this? I don't get that one.
Sean Ellis has been going hard for WWE in the chat. That's
okay.
Yeah.
Wrong night, wrong Saturday.
But no, in all seriousness, it really was a cool show. I think a lot more good outweighed the bad, but you have to understand we're an hour-long podcast. We have to go through the nitty and the gritty. Thoughts about the pay-per-view? Any last notes here today?
No, overall, I thought the pay-per-view, from an in-ring standpoint, I enjoyed most of it. You know, that's never been the problem with AEW. The AEW is not the in-ring work. It's the storytelling aspect and how they present their shows. It felt like one match after another. There wasn't a lot of time. They did have video packages for the final match and maybe one or two other ones, but for the most part, it was like there wasn't enough time to digest what just happened from the match before.
Oh, I see.
You know, I don't like being rushed through because, like you said, if I have to run and get a drink or run to the bathroom or something like that, I'm missing something.
Right. <You know>? Right. I think it's a longer term problem. I think we need more characters that we can like brag to our friends about, like how MJF was in his prime, Adam Cole's in the prime. So we're seeing them come back. So hopefully we get more of those. But my biggest issue, if there really was an issue, is that if Wrestle Dream is to survive as a tribute to Mr. Inoki, there really needs to be more of that, or else it will just be another show, because 6 weeks from now is Full Gear, which is no big deal if you're in Stanford, but AEW started doing four shows a year. So you're telling me in 6 weeks, get your money because we're doing it again. Then this show has to be different and has to stand out for different levels.
Good point. Very good point.
But that's just me, man. I'm just an old curmudgeon. I'm actually older than Ricochet, so I guess I'm officially old.
You should have seen me earlier today screaming at everybody to get off my lawn.
You got a lawn? All right, someone's made it big, you know?
Oh, man, I got to cut that darn thing every week. Anyway.
Yeah.
At least I got the cool lawnmower that's got the lever where you pull the lever and the front wheels turn.
You don't ride them a little more?
Like, no, it's not a riding one. You got to walk behind it, but it's got the front wheel drive on it. So,
yeah. The power steering. Dude, I love it, man. Look, hey, thanks for us thanks for you guys for hanging with us. It's 1 o'clock Eastern as we record this, man. Jimmy, you're doing a lot besides this show. After a quick nap, where can people find you? What are you working on? Let us know.
You can find me here on Monday nights after Raw, Wednesday nights after Dynamite. You can find me at the Refing It Up podcast with my good brother in stripes, Brian Hebner, and RJ, who holds like glue together. This past week, who did we interview this past? Oh, Ricardo Rodriguez.
Which was
a lot of fun. Good to talk to him again. And you can catch me also on the Huge Pop Radio show up here in Canada on TSN 690 out of Montreal.
Whoa!
My friend Donnie DeSilva and I do a show every Sunday night from 11 to midnight. And this week we talked to Al Snow. I love talking to Al Snow. He's just so much fun to talk to. And what a great mind, man. This, when you talk about great minds of the business, Al is just incredible to listen to. He's one of those guys, when he starts talking about the business, you just go.
Yeah.
You know, your ears open, eyes wide, you know, and you just take it all in. And of course, my ref and rants every day from Monday to Friday on all my social media platforms, tightening screws that I believe need tightening. And of course, if you want to have fun on Twitter, you can catch me there.
That's where the haters go. Danny Cracker in Shot the Fire Pro Wrestling says, Mr. Flobo, which is kind of, it's Dr. Flobo to you. See, like there's an opening in shows not covered by Wink Draped in Gold. Unfortunately, for those of you, the fans of the Draped in Gold podcast, because of NXT's appearance on the CW, I'm unable to watch it in time to do the show. So the show's in hiatus. It's just the way it is. Same with here at Wrestling Inc. But thank you. DrapedInGold.com is actually a cool show that Jack and I would get together and talk about NXT about, but it's on hiatus. But that's about that. Wrestle Dream, AEW 2024. Hopefully we bring it back next year with more of the good stuff. Flobo Boys, you can catch me with the Wrestling Inc. crew. I typically cover the Friday Night SmackDown after show alongside Glenn Rubenstein. I think Emily May is back next week, so stick around for that. As my broadcast colleague Jack Farmer would say, I am hitting the end stream button now.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.